Welcome to History Lost in Time, from one enthusiast to others. And welcome to episode 20 of this podcast, where today I will talk about strategic bombing missions of the Allies against German targets during World War I. Yes, World War I, you heard correctly. Back then, the Air Forces only played secondary roles, very different to World War II. And when thinking about the war in the air during World War I, people often imagine the Red Baron Manfred von Richthofen and small bi- and triplanes that hunt each other at the Western Front. However, that is an incomplete picture.
Why this topic today?
If World War I hadn't been overshadowed by World War II after a few years, it would be a topic that would be discussed at epic lengths. However, World War I influenced the lives of millions of people. On that account alone, it shouldn't be forgotten.
Political background and commentary.
None.
The sources.
Two books and Wikipedia will help me in this episode. Janusz Pikalkiewicz, Der Erste Weltkrieg, translation World War I, published by Econ Verlag, Düsseldorf, Vienna, New York, 1988, licensed version for Weltbild Verlag, Augsburg, 1998. This is a massive book from the Polish historian whose name I hopefully pronounced at least partially correct. He wrote extensive books on both world wars. Hans-Joachim Mau and Charles E. Skorrell, Flugzeugträger, Trägerflugzeuge, translation Aircraft Carriers, Carrier Aircraft, published by Bechtermünz Verlag, licensed version for Weltbild Verlag, Augsburg, 1996. In this book, both aircraft carriers and carrier aircraft of the 20th century are being discussed, both on a time axis and in individual profiles. In 1914, aviation was still in its infancy. If you want to get an impression of that, both informative and entertaining, I recommend the movie Those Magnificent Men in Their Flying Machines. It is set in 1910, and the plot revolves about an air race from London to Paris. The aircraft in this movie are all real aircraft, no models, no CGI. And in 1914, the air forces were equipped with aircraft like this. Slow, fragile aircraft that could carry only very little payload and that were generally not trusted. Aerial reconnaissance in 1914 was mostly ignored by the ground forces. Only when the cavalry proved useless in trench warfare, armies had to make use of aircraft, performing aerial reconnaissance and preventing enemy aerial reconnaissance. That was the bread and butter business of air forces at the Western Front during World War I. However, right from the start, there were also attempts to perform airstrikes with guns and bombs. The Germans liked using Zeppelin airships, since they could carry a high bomb load and also had a long range. However, the Allies preferred aircraft from the beginning. One such early airstrike is described in the Pikalkiewicz book on page 155. On November 21, 1914, three British Avro 504 aircraft took off in Belfort, France, and attacked the Zeppelin shipyard in Friedrichshafen at the Bodensee. Wikipedia mentions four aircraft, but let's not dwell on that. Let's agree on a handful of aircraft. The Avro 504 was a British biplane that had served with the British Air Corps since 1913. It was powered by an 80 horsepower engine, later versions had a 110 horsepower engine. Its top speed was fairly limited, 153 kilometers per hour or 95 miles per hour with the upgraded engine. Cruise speed was more like 119 kilometers per hour or 74 miles per hour. The range was 400 kilometers or 250 miles. It was armed with one 7.7mm machine gun, which was installed on top of the upper wing so that it could fire over the propeller circle. The 504 served during the entire war, but they were quickly relegated to secondary duties once more powerful aircraft were introduced. After the war, they continued serving as trainers well into the 1930s, but in 1914, they were frontline aircraft. For their mission against the Zeppelin shipyard, the Avros were equipped with extra fuel tanks and 4 9-kilogram bombs each. Engagements in the air usually took place near the front line at the time, but this time the British flew 200 kilometers into enemy territory. During final approach, they raced above the ground at a height of just 3 meters or 10 feet in order to surprise the Germans. However, the Germans knew they were coming. I will now quote an article from the Neue Zürcher Zeitung, a Swiss newspaper, from November 22, 1914, which can be found in the Pikalkiewicz book on page 155. The first plane headed directly toward the Zeppelin shipyard. It approached at tremendous speed. As soon as it came within firing range, the cannons blared and the machine gun fire of the air defense crackled. The plane circled above the hangar and then plummeted at breakneck speed from an altitude of about 1,000 meters directly toward the balloon hangar. An exciting scene followed. The Landsturm troops stationed to guard the hangar opened heavy fire on the descending aircraft. The machine gun fire crackled and the gunfire echoed a thousandfold across the lake. When the plane was only about 40 meters above the hangar, several saucepan-shaped bombs were suddenly seen falling. At the same time, however, the pilot seemed to have lost control of his aircraft. The biplane plummeted steeply to the ground, where it rolled for about 50 meters before coming to rest on a meadow on the grounds of the Zeppelin shipyard. Using spectacular words, the journalist describes how Squadron Commander Briggs was shot down and captured. During this attack, the British hit the shipyard and damaged a hangar and a gasometer that was used to create hydrogen for the Zeppelins. Of course, the airstrike wasn't as devastating as those from World War II. How should it be, with only a few attacking aircraft armed with light bombs? However, we can already see all elements of aerial warfare, and individual airstrikes like this demonstrated what was possible. 4 years later, on July 19, 1918, the British launched another spectacular airstrike. This time the target was Tondern, a Zeppelin base in the north of Schleswig, which nowadays is part of Denmark, but back then belonged to Germany. The target was out of range of land-based aircraft, therefore the attack was launched by the aircraft carrier HMS Furious. Before I talk about the attack itself, let me take a step back first, because when I say attack launched from an aircraft carrier, you might see a picture of an aircraft carrier inside your head that we are used to since World War II. A large flight deck, a single island superstructure on the side. Please delete that picture immediately. HMS Furious started her life as a courageous class battle cruiser and was rebuilt several times. Originally, she was supposed to be launched as a conventional battlecruiser. Her armament was supposed to consist of 2 double-barreled gun turrets, 38.1 cm in caliber, with 1 turret at the front and 1 at the back of the ship. The secondary armament was supposed to consist of 6 triple-barreled 102 mm guns, 2 double-barreled 76 mm guns, and 2 torpedo launchers. A crew of 842 was supposed to cruise the high seas with a top speed of 32 knots. However, right from the start, one of the gun turrets was removed and replaced with a large hangar for up to 10 aircraft, and a flight deck was installed behind the superstructure at the center of the ship. The ship had a length of 240 meters, but less than a third of the ship's length was available to the pilots. The flight deck had a length of just 49 meters or 160 feet. That was barely enough for taking off. Landings were life-threatening. Only very experienced pilots managed to pull that off. During the next overhaul, the British took off the other gun turret and installed a 91 meters flight deck. However, the tower-like superstructure in the middle of the ship remained. 2 railway-like mini-roads connected both flight decks so aircraft could move around the superstructure from one flight deck to another. Why the British insisted on keeping the superstructure and thereby forced pilots to land while staring at the wall of steel? Anyway, that was the condition of HMS Furious when she steamed towards Tondern in 1918. At a distance of about 150 kilometers from the target, she launched 7 Sopwith Camel aircraft. The soap with camel had served with the British forces since 1917 and had proven itself to be a very successful and robust aircraft, light years away from the fragile aircraft from 1914. They were powered by 130 horsepower engines and reached a top speed of 182 kilometers per hour or 113 miles per hour. Their range was 480 kilometers and they were armed with two 7.7mm machine guns. This may not sound much better than the Avro, but when it came to stability and maneuverability, there were worlds between the aircraft of 1914 and 18. The Sopwith Camels were equipped with light 23-kilogram bombs for the attack against Tondon. The seven aircraft attacked in two waves and were able to destroy two Zeppelins, LZ-99 and LZ-108, and to also damage their hangars. The German ground crew was caught by surprise but suffered no casualties and only had four wounded. The successful attack came at a price for the British, though. Not a single aircraft returned to the carrier. German air defenses only managed to score a few hits, so that wasn't the cause for that. One of the aircraft was forced to turn around even before it had reached the target due to engine damage. Landing on the carrier was not possible, so the pilot had to ditch his aircraft into the sea. Three of the British pilots considered it impossible to reach the fleet due to lack of fuel and therefore landed in neutral Denmark, where they were interned. The other three risked it but couldn't find the fleet, so they also had to perform emergency landings at sea. One of them was killed while trying this. Again, this attack demonstrated what was possible, but also what was necessary. The British didn't launch another carrier-based attack during the war, since a loss rate of 100% was obviously unacceptable. HMS Furious was rebuilt after World War I and recommissioned with a single unified flight deck in 1925. She served with the Royal Navy until 1944 and was scrapped after the war between 1948 and 54. Zeppelins were already past their prime in 1918, and attacks like this only proved that point. The age of the aircraft had already begun.
Finishing words.
Two airstrikes, Friedrichshafen 1914 and Tondon 1918, are examples of how strategic bombing looked like in World War I. A handful of aircraft, flown by audacious pilots, trying things nobody had ever done before. Flights deep into enemy territory, the dropping of bombs, low-level attacks, takeoffs from aircraft carriers. All things that were perfected during World War II and that are normal bread-and-butter business of modern air forces. All of that was first tried out by hard-working pioneers back then. The Germans first used Zeppelin airships for their strategic bombing missions and later switched to large bombers from companies like Gotha. If there's interest, I may talk about that in future episodes.
Thank you for your interest.